Tell you what, he's on the line now, and I can't believe he's in a studio working away. Midge, welcome to the programme.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good, mate. How yourself?
Yeah, busy, which is good. Yeah. Busy's good.
Yeah, don't you ever stop?
No, I don't do it. It's like I'm like a hamster on the wheel, you know, just keep going.
Yeah.
Life's full of great things to kind of, you know, get involved in, so I just keep getting involved in stuff. It's fabulous.
And well, you're going to have to pick me up on different things here, because normally when people interview you, they've got a massive load of paperwork in front of them with biogs and everything, and I've just got this nice new album of yours in front of me, which I really do enjoy playing, called Fragile.
Oh, thank you.
And I just absolutely, I was saying to James, the guy who set the interview up with me, I said, I love the two instrumental tracks.
Oh, good. Oh, see, that's a bit of a passion of mine. See, I've always indulged a wee bit in making instrumental music.
Yeah.
Because to me, it's I just love it. I mean, I buy loads of instrumental stuff, loads of film soundtrack stuff, and you know, it's just great. So yeah, I like to do that stuff.
Yeah, was it easy to do those two instrumental ones, Mitch? Was the inspiration easy to get to?
Well, one of them in particular, there's a very long one on there called Wire and Wood,
yes.
And it's very orchestral and very cinematic and ambient and stuff. But that took a long time, because if you listen to it, I mean, I don't play any of those particular instruments. I don't play the oboe and the cellos and the strings. But with technology, you can program a lot of that stuff. You can use those sounds to it's like having an orchestra at your fingertips.
Absolutely,
but you have to tell it what to do. So I was kind of experimenting and playing with the idea of doing this very long kind of cinematic flowing thing that, where the melody and the tune constantly changes. It's not just a verse and a chorus and a verse and a chorus and a middle section. It's just constantly, the melody constantly changes over the chords all the time. So it was something that I spent a long time doing that. I must have spent, you know, maybe a year putting that track together.
And I bet if you were dead honest about it, it could have gone longer than 7 minutes and 7 seconds, couldn't it?
Oh, easily, you know, because there's so much you can do to stuff like that, you know. Once you throw off the shackles of making a piece of music that has to fit kind of radio format, you know, the 3-4 minute single, then you're off. You've got a blank canvas in front of you. You can do whatever you like, so it's quite a fun thing to do.
Yeah, but the beauty of your album, Fragile, you've got nothing that's 3-4 minutes long.
I haven't, you know, I think I said in the blurb, which obviously you don't have right there in front of you, that it was, for me, we seem to have lost something along the line, and over the last, you know, 20 years or whatever, where people hear a track on the radio and go, oh, I like that, so they'll go and they'll listen to little snippets of stuff on the internet, and then only get the two or three tracks that they like, and they miss out the whole experience of, you know, the journey that an album can take you on, and which is what I always used to love. You put a track on at the beginning, an album on at the beginning, and then you play it right through to the final track, and it's taken you on a little journey, and we seem to have lost that. So I tried to do something that would, you know, recapture that.
Well, I think it's something you're famous for anyway, Midge, isn't it? Because I mean, without even going back to the days of Vienna, that was no short track, was it?
No, we've got a history of this, I think. You know, I remember having a conversation back then, because if people remember, I probably don't, that Vienna was the third single from the Vienna album, and it's because the record company kept saying, you need to cut it down. I said, well, we can't, it's a piece of music. What do you cut down? Do you chop the beginning down? Do you take the chorus out? Do you take out the viola solo?
No. Yeah.
It all works. It's one long, linear piece of music. You know, if somebody wants to fade it, they'll fade it.
That's,
you know,
right.
It's not a problem.
Yeah.
But we just refused to do it. So it took ages before the record company finally came to a show, saw the reaction that song got, and just said, you know what, just release it as it is. So.
Yeah, yeah. Was it a massive disappointment that it never went to number one, Midge?
No. You know what? We'd gone from, you know, going nowhere in the charts to, you know, having a record that sat at number two for 5 weeks, and that was just enormous to us. That was just amazing. And of course, the ridiculous thing, obviously people remember the Joe Dolce thing keeping it off the number one spot, because it's now become quite famous, but they can't forget that, you know, John Lennon was shot at the same time, and he kept us off the number one spot for a while. So we went from the ridiculous to the sublime.
Yeah.
You know, we went from this joke nonsense record to, you know, John Lennon, one of the greatest, you know, writers and characters, musicians, you know, ever.
Yeah, and that kept you off the top as well.
It did, but, you know, you know what? It didn't care. We outsold both of them.
Yeah.
You know, that one track instantly, you know, transported us from, you know, playing small clubs like, you know, Eric's and things like that, to all of a sudden playing big venues. It changed everything overnight. It was just incredible.
Eric's is still going, you know, Midge.
I hear. I know.
Eric's is still going.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, Hugh and Cry were in there a couple of weeks back.
But places with history like that, you need to keep them going. You know, new bands need to go out and find places to go and cut their teeth, so it's great that it's still going.
Mm-hmm. I mean, do you still have good memories, like even going further back to the Rich Kids and when you jumped on with Steve Strange and did a little bit with Visage?
Oh, yeah, well, I did all of that. All of it, you know, it was great. The Rich Kids... it got me out of Glasgow. It moved me. You know, that's when I moved south to London. And you know, getting involved with that band was fabulous. It's when I first bought a synthesizer. It's when I tried to introduce electronics, this new toy, this new instrument, into traditional rock instruments, which the Rich Kids were playing. And although they hated the idea, half the band, it broke the band up. The synthesizer, which broke the band up, half the band loved it, half the band hated it. So the half who loved it went off and came up with the concept of Visage. And we did Visage as a studio concept with all our favorite musicians. And of course, we ended up, you know, writing Fade to Grey, which became another huge thing.
Yeah. Do you still see any of the old boys?
I still see the Ultravox guys. Yeah, we got together again four or 5 years ago.
Yeah.
As our kind of 30th anniversary of writing Vienna.
Yes.
And we went out on tour and absolutely loved it. Mm. And then ended up making an album again together, which is really bizarre. But I still see the guys, and I still see some of the guys from Visage, but not that many, because we're all leading very different lives now.
Yeah. But you're still right at the very top. I mean, I've got a question here from one of my friends and one of the listeners. His name's Ron, and he runs a computer shop in Ainsdale, which is not far from our radio station. And he said, I can't believe you're going to be talking to my hero, because I've followed him since the Rich Kids, all the way through everything. And he's listening now. And he just said to me, would Midge ever consider coming to Southport to this beautiful art centre we've got here to do an acoustic set?
You know what? I do. I think there's a misconception that the public have, that artists sit down with a big map and go, I think I'll play there this week, and then I think I'll do that the week after. It doesn't kind of work that way. You have to be invited. You have to have a promoter come to you and say, would you like to play in Southport? You know, you think, oh, great. You know, and I go out with my little acoustic guitar, and I go and do one-man shows up and down the country, and you know, small art theatres, intimate little places that hold maybe, you know, 250, 300 people. That's what I really enjoy doing.
Yeah.
So yes, you know, now that we've just said that on the radio, maybe somebody will ask me.
Well, now that you've just said that, so I'm going to be the promoter, and I'm going to say to you, Midge, you know, why don't you come up to Southport, and we promote the show here on this radio station, and let's get it together.
There you go. Done deal.
Done deal.
Done deal.
It wasn't that easy for Live Aid, was it, mate?
Slightly more complicated. Just a bit.
You've got to
remember that, you know, when Live Aid happened, which is still one of the, you know, the biggest concerts ever on the planet.
Yes.
You know, we didn't have the internet. You know, we didn't have texts and emails and all of that. We had telex, which involved, you know, streams of papers streaming out somebody else's telex on the other side of the Atlantic. You know, we had mobile phones that you could hardly lift because they were so big and heavy.
Yeah.
And there was no one to call because you didn't know anybody else who had a mobile phone. It was a tall order trying to put that together.
What's lined up for June of next year, Midge, when it's the 30th anniversary?
You know what? Right now, I was talking about it this morning to an ex-manager of mine. And right now, there's absolutely no plans whatsoever. I'd imagine something will happen, because the jungle drums have started already, and everyone's, they realize that, of course, this year is the 30-year anniversary of Do They Know It's Christmas.
Yes.
And next year's the 30th anniversary of Live Aid.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, whether we've got, you know, the gumption and the wherewithal to go and do something and try and celebrate this 30th anniversary or not, I really don't know. You know, what I'd like to see is some of the younger, newer guys come along and say, you know what, we can do this and do it better. So the option's there, but I think we'll just have to wait and see on that one. I honestly, hand on heart, do not know of anything that's happening next year.
No. But it must have been such a tremendous buzz for you, Mitch, you know, to pick everything that with Bob and getting phone calls through and say, yeah, we'll do this, and then suddenly realise we're going to pack Wembley Stadium here.
Yeah, I know. You know, the reality didn't kick in until the day of the show, and even, you know, because the artists had to get brought in by helicopter because the streets were all blocked off, and it was a really sunny day.
Yeah.
And I remember sitting in this helicopter looking down at an empty Wembley Stadium and all the people all standing outside it, and I thought, oh my God, it's real. You know, yeah. even though we've been talking about it and you know, kind of working on it for 3 months at this point, it was still the reality of seeing it there and thinking, oh, it's really going to happen. And then standing backstage, the moment Status Quo went on and played Rockin' All Over the World,
yes.
It was just brilliant.
Yeah.
It was fantastic. You know, it was just a magic moment.
There are so many magic moments from that gig, Mitch. But if you could sort of just put one into perspective for us, would you have one that would stand out?
Well, I think, you know, not talking about my own stuff, I think talking about sitting out front for a bit and watching, you know, Queen,
yes.
You know, deliver 18 minutes of just gloriousness, you know, it was phenomenal.
Yeah.
And then at the other end of the spectrum, equally good, but in a very different way, was U2, who, you know, just got lost in the moment and just became this magic. They became a huge, huge global band after the performance there, and quite rightly so, because
yeah.
People saw them for the massive talent that they were.
Who was the lunatic running around, Midge, saying, you can only do 18 minutes, Freddie. If you go over, well, somebody's going to have their tongues chopped off and they're not going to be very happy. Who was doing all that?
Well, you know what? You didn't have to do it, because what the public didn't know was, before you walked on stage, the stage manager, the tour manager, whatever, would come up to you and say, when you get on there, there'll be a traffic light system at the side of the stage. And he said, you walk on and it's green. And he said, at 16 minutes, it goes amber. And he said, then you won't see it turn red because the power goes off. And nobody, it's true, and nobody wanted to be standing on stage while the power went off in front of, you know, billions of people. So the whole thing stayed on time. Isn't that amazing?
That's absolutely fantastic. I didn't even know that. And that's something
yeah.
And of course, some people didn't do the 18 minutes, did they?
Well, you know, I'm not sure. Some people did less, I think, but nobody went over.
That's right.
You know, I know that U2 got lost in the moment when they got the girl up dancing and things and didn't get a chance to play the new single, so that's great.
And of course, and then there was the phenomenal thing with Phil Collins jumping on a plane and going over to Philadelphia.
Yeah, that's just showing off, though, isn't it?
Wasn't it just?
That's just been flash. It's only Phil could do that, you know, just get on a plane and go over and play with Led Zeppelin or whatever it was he played with. And you think, oh, God, it's just incredible. But, it summed up what the day was all about. You know, nothing was impossible.
No.
That was the whole concept, you know, that we could make a difference, we could make a change in it, and we certainly did, you know.
Well, I certainly hope something does happen next year, you know, and but that's something to put on the back burner. We've got this mid-year album in front of me now, Fragile. What's in the pipeline once this is out now to the world? What's in the pipeline for Midge for the rest of the year and onwards?
Well, I've got, I'm always working. I've got dates between now, taking me right up till the end of the year. And we're now starting to look at the year after, because I like to go out and perform live.
Yes.
I'm doing a tour in America in August and September with Howard Jones and Tom Bailey from the Thompson Twins and China Crisis.
Go on, you know, the Liverpool lads.
The Liverpool lads. I'm going to have those two, you know, with their razor sharp wit. you know, talking to me all the time in the tour bus. So that's going to be fun.
I'll tell you a little story, a very quickly little story, Midge. Gary and Eddie, we go back an awful long way. I worked at a radio station in Liverpool, which is celebrating its 40th year this year, Radio City. And I've got a nice signed disc from album from Gary and Eddie, because I was the first one to play African and White.
Wow. I bought their albums back in the day. I thought they were a fantastic band. They were great writers.
Yes, and still
really
are.
Interesting stuff. All that, you know, Workers in the Field, you know, all of those tracks. Yeah. I loved it.
Yes. So we're going to leave you now. You're back into your studio. But I'm going to give you a tinkle on the number that you've got with me here. And I want to go out with a track that you're going to pick for me that you'll introduce from your album, Fragile.
Okay.
Help Yourself, which it's all lined up for you, so you can pick one.
Right,
any track, 1 to 10.
All right, I don't, you know what, I don't know the numbers.
Okay, well, just, you know the titles, do you? Number one is I Survived, two is Are We Connected, three...
I've got the titles, I remember writing them, yeah. all right, my choice from the Fragile album has got to be, right now my current favourite is Starcrossed.
What a great choice. Midge, it's been a pleasure. And I hope we get together very soon.
I hope so. That's good. It was great fun.
Yeah. Take care, Mitch. Thank you.
Excellent. Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
See you. Bye.